From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The budget is still in flux, said one state lawmaker late last week, reminding her fellow legislators that there's still time to figure out the best budgetary formula for New Hampshire. On Thursday, Senate Republicans said no to several revenue proposals on which the House budget relied, including higher taxes on gasoline and cigarettes. And in an even bigger possible hit, senators also cast serious doubt on whether they'll allow the state to accept federal money to expand Medicaid. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, the House rejected a bipartisan Senate bill to bring in new money through expanded gambling. Also, that no vote, along with the Senate's rejected cigarette tax, puts a huge hole in the governor's preferred budget. And senators are meeting today to continue hashing out details of their plan, a task made more difficult by all these competing votes. So now the question everyone's asking at the Statehouse is, what's next? There seems to be less of an appetite than last session to make major budget cuts, but given that all these revenue options have been closed off, that looks like the road lawmakers may have to choose. Today in The Exchange, budgetary back and forth on the battles ahead. Let's hear from you. What's your take on all that happened on the revenue front last week? What do you wish had happened? And if cuts are necessary to balance the budget, where should they be made? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests in studio. Charlie Arlinghouse is here, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, a free market think tank based in Concord. And Charlie, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Kevin, thanks for your time.
Great to be back, Laura.
Also with us, Jeff McLynch, executive director of the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute. And Jeff, good to see you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and Kevin, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody. You know, budget conversations, very complicated. It can get a little dry for a lot of folks. Kevin, just remind us why this is so important.
Well, I mean, the state budget is really the dashboard for New Hampshire. It really, what people have to remember, for example, is the state of New Hampshire is the largest employer in the state by far, 11,000 employees. There's close to $11 billion document we're working on right now, over 1,500 pages. And it does affect people in ways they often don't comprehend. If you spent the Memorial Day weekend on that nice day on Monday, went to Odeon State Park, there were state park managers there. Next month, I have to get a new driver's license and also my two cars registered. You'll do that at the Department of Motor Vehicles. There's all kinds of ways state government touches people. And for the most part, people hope they don't touch them in overly aggressive ways, and that's one of the reasons why without an income or a sales tax, we don't have as big a government as other states do, and we don't have as intrusive a state government as other states do.
Yeah, give us your overview, too, and picking up Jeff McLynch on Kevin's point. It's not just, you know, what folks might sometimes think about, you know, food stamps for the needy.
Sure. I mean, I think when we talk about budget debates, a lot of times many, many numbers get thrown around, and I suspect that we'll do a little bit of that here today. It's unavoidable. But when you take a step back and look at the budget and really what it is, it's really a statement of our priorities as a state, and it's a reflection of our values. It's the way in which we educate ourselves and our children and prepare them to be productive members of society. It's the way that we protect ourselves through our court system, through first responders. It's also the way in which we care for, as you suggested, people who have hit upon hard times, but it's also the way in which we provide health care for people from, you know, the early years, the dawn of life up until the twilight years. It's also the way in which we preserve our natural environment, ensure it's there for future generations, but it's also the way in which we make sure that we have a productive economy through investments in roads and bridges and things like that. And I think when you look at the broad numbers, those priorities are pretty clear. Most of the budget goes toward, and this is the general and education funds, most goes towards higher education and public education, but also to Health and Human Services, principally the state's Medicaid program.
So it's a reflection of our priorities, who we are, and what we think is important. That's Charlie, your broad thoughts.
Well, I think that makes sense. It is a reflection of priorities, and every budget sort of has to fit into that context. A lot of budget debates get a lot of people will focus on a budget debate on one very specific aspect, the program they're most interested in, the aspect they're most interested in. The difficult thing for most lawmakers, though, is that they're not allowed to focus on individual items absent the entire picture. They have to focus on the entire picture. And one of the big learning processes for any new lawmaker is that they sit there and they say, yeah, okay, I want to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. Okay. Oh, I can't do all of that. I can do three of them. Ooh, which three? Or maybe I'll do half of everything. And they sit there and it's that. I mean, a budget. A budget, the reason we have one instead of just deciding on individual programs is to try to allocate our resources globally and decide, you know, this is something we all do at home, obviously, where you're like, geez, I want to get steak tonight. Oh, you know what? We had steak twice. Maybe it's time for chicken because if I had steak every day, I can't afford to buy my groceries. So you sort of weigh things against each other. So we decide priorities sort of in and of themselves, but we also weigh them against each other.
And in the broader fiscal picture, right, Charlie? How much money is available? How's the economy doing?
Well, right. So every process, you'll hear somebody at some point will say, I would do that too if we had the money.
And your revenue estimates are inflated.
Exactly. Revenue. That's another thing that's always in there. But I would do that if I had the money, and you usually say that about something you don't really want to do anyway.
Okay, so great setting out of the big picture, why we talk about this, why it's so important, why it's so difficult. Kevin, just remind us, what was the tone at the beginning of this legislative session for this budget? You know, were there bipartisan hopes for how it would unfold this year?
I think they worry. I think, though, you have to go back to the past budget that was written by the supermajority Republicans. In that Republican tsunami election in 2010, that produced 3-1 majorities in both the House and the Senate. It produced probably, certainly, the most conservative state budget in more than a generation. 11% net cuts in state spending over the past year. Even in 1 year, a net cut in state spending had only occurred one other time in the previous 20 years. So we came into this session with divided government, with a Democratic majority in the House, but not a huge majority, a Republican majority in the Senate, but not a huge majority. So there was a lot of talk about at the beginning of the year about we don't have the votes to make all the cuts as conservative Republicans we would prefer to make or continue over the past 2 years. As Democrats, we don't have the votes to restore all the spending from the O'Brien budget of 2 years ago. So we're going to have to meet in the middle somewhere. And I think we veered off that road a bit over the past couple of months, which we'll talk about, as both sides have sort of chosen their favored highway. And they're sort of like parallel roads that don't intersect, and that's where we are right now.
Yeah, I remember sitting down with people at the beginning of the year, and there was a lot of hope. As you said, Kevin, nobody really had the upper hand, so everybody said, you know, we're going to have to compromise on this, and we'll talk this hour about how that has not happened yet at this point. Our phone number for you to join our conversation with your questions and comments about the state budget, how it's unfolding at this point in time, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. As we look at the failure of the casino, the gas tax, the cigarette tax, and other revenue ideas last week, what's your take on all that happened on the revenue front? What do you wish had happened? And if we're looking at cuts to balance the budget, where should those cuts be made? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Jeff and Charlie, to you too. Charlie, maybe you first. Maggie Hassan and the Democrats campaigned on, these are their words, restoring the reckless cuts from the last legislature. That's what they said. That was their line. And they won, so they came in feeling like, hey, we've got a mandate to restore some state funding.
Well, at the end of the day, everybody wants to, quote unquote, restore state funding. Every cut is unpopular. Every new spending program is popular. And there are a couple of different ways to look at the last budget. The one is just, as Kevin described, it is the largest, the only significant cut in the post-World War II history of the state. Steve Merrill's second budget went down 2% the first year, up 1% the second. And that's the only other reduction in spending we'd ever had. And this was a very significant reduction in spending. However, somebody who was in the legislature 2 years ago and is not anymore said to me, we spent all the money we had. We just didn't spend any more than we had. And that's what they'll tell you is that their spending decision was made on the basis of the money that was available. And they felt, rightly or wrongly, that the previous legislature or two had not done that. They had used one-time revenue sources and money that had gone away. And that money, the stimulus money, was not there anymore. They were not going to borrow money for operating expenses, et cetera. So that's how much they had to spend. Coming into that, I think that if you were to talk to the governor today, she would say that her picture of the budget pre-election and post-election were very different. Because post-election, I think she came in and sat down, like a lot of people did, and they said, all right, let's look at the numbers. And they went, oh, I thought we had more than that. No, we don't have more than that. You may have thought we did, but if you want more, you got to find somewhere to get more. We would have sat here in January and said, you know what, I think she's going to propose gambling in her budget because she wants the money to spend on certain priorities so she can, in fact, restore the money. The debate right now, a large part of the debate is over not just priorities, but how much is available to be spent. And that's a lot of the difference between the House and the Senate is on a couple of key areas. Are you going to raise taxes in this area and this area? Is one thing, and will this revenue source generate the money that you think it will? We think it'll generate less, you think it'll generate more. That has to be hashed out before we know where the priorities end up, frankly.
Yeah, and after a short break, we'll talk about the differences between the House, the Senate, and the governor that we saw last week. But real quick to you too, Jeff McClinch, it's interesting what Charlie says, Governor Hassan's sort of pre-election budgetary ideas versus post-election when the reality hits.
Yeah, I think if you were to rewind 6 months back to October, November, when the budget process was really getting underway, it was pretty clear that the state was going to face at least one major challenge and enjoy one major opportunity. The challenge would be constrained choices due to low expectations of revenue growth, but also the legacy of past tax cuts that were going to come to bear in this budget. The opportunity, obviously, would be to accept billions of dollars in federal funds over the next 7 years to reduce the ranks of the uninsured here in the state
through
the state's Medicaid program. And I think the last 6 to 7 months have done nothing but bear that out. Any side in the budget debate has seen relatively low revenue growth so far.
All right. Well, and after break, we'll talk a lot more. We'll take your phone calls, 1-800-892-6477. Your questions, comments about the state budget, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and you can take NHPR with you wherever you go with the NHPR app, available for Apple and Android devices. It lets you stream NHPR and Classical NH 24/7, download all of our podcasts, and receive news updates throughout the day. And it keeps you updated on all the discounts you're entitled to with your NHPR member card. Download the NHPR app today. More on budgetary back and forth on the exchange, and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the problems facing Western democracy. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Portsmouth Woodcraft, featuring a wide variety of woodworking tools and supplies, Fox Run Road, Newington, and PortsmouthWoodcraft.com. Woodcraft, helping you make woodwork. From Checkmate Payroll, a family-owned business providing workforce management solutions to employers in New Hampshire and beyond since 1994, CheckmateNH.com. And Central New Hampshire VNA and Hospice, with offices in Wolfboro and Laconia, offering in-home health care services in New Hampshire's Lakes region, CentralVNA.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the state budget with several revenue sources rejected last week. Everybody's asking, where do we go from here? We invite you to join us with your thoughts on that question, 1-800-892-6477. What's your take on all that happened on the revenue front at the State House last week, whether it's the rejection of casino gambling, the rejection of cigarette taxes, the rejection of higher gasoline taxes? What do you wish had happened? And if cuts are going to be needed, where do you think they should be made? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. With us now on the phone is someone who's been intimately involved with this whole budget process. We're talking with Mary Jane Wallner, Democratic State Representative from Concord, Chair of the Finance Committee. And Representative Wallner, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. you, Laura. It's nice to be here.
Well, what's front and center on your mind now, Representative Wallner, given all that happened last week? What's next?
Well, I'm looking forward to today, actually, because the Senate Finance Committee is finalizing their budget plan. So I'm anxious to see what they're going to propose. Of course, that won't be final until next week when it goes to the floor of the Senate on the 6th. I think once we see that, we'll know, you know, where they're going. And I look forward to a committee of conference and working on the budget together.
So Senate Finance is meeting today, this morning, as I understand.
Yes.
And we'll have some of an idea of what the Senate's priorities might be. But as you said, the full Senate won't chime in until next week, Representative
right.
Wilder.
Right, on the 6th, I believe.
I want to ask you about that big House vote last week and the critique that the House rejected a huge source of what supporters called voluntary revenue, those supporters including a lot of Democrats and Republicans in the Senate. How do you feel about that criticism, Representative Wallner, that you guys in the House said no to a real great pool of cash there?
Well, I think that if you really take a look at the House, you see that historically the House has been very, very cautious about voting for expanding gambling. So the vote really, I don't think, came as a surprise that the House would not move to add that revenue source to the budget. And as you know, the House did pass a budget in late March that was without gambling in it. It was slightly reduced from what the governor sent us, but I think we shared almost all of the governor's priorities and made an attempt to restore most of the priorities that she had laid forward in her budget. We did not include the gambling revenue.
The Senate has said, Representative Wallner, that part of the way you were able to do that was through taxes, which the Senate has rejected, gasoline and cigarette taxes, but also overestimating how much money you would get from something called the Medicaid Enhancement Tax, also assuming that the state will expand Medicaid as envisioned by the Affordable Care Act. So they're saying, look, part of the reason you were able to do that is you went out on a too hopeful limb, if I could put it that way.
Well, we did have the cigarette tax increase in there, and I know that the Senate has rejected that. I hope, though, that you know there can still be some discussion about that. I think that's a tax that people understand. They know there's not only benefit from revenue, but there's also been health benefits to a cigarette tax increase. As far as the gasoline tax, gasoline tax does not really affect the general fund, though it certainly it would have given us a source of income to improve our bridges and our roads, which are in desperate need of repair. So it's a shame that they have rejected that, but as far as the general fund, as far as the state budget goes, it really does not affect the general fund.
What about the criticism, though, that you folks in the House overestimated how much money you would get from those other two sources that I mentioned?
As far as the Medicaid Enhancement Tax, I think that's a place that we're going to have to sit down with the Senate and really negotiate about what how much that will bring in. We used the revenue estimates that the governor presented, and she had a panel of experts who had worked on those revenues for her budget. So I think that's a starting place for us. The Senate has decided on a lower revenue. But I think that's one of the places we're going to need to get together and really negotiate.
Yeah, and how hopeful are you feeling, Representative Wallner, when you get together about your ability to reach common ground? Kevin Landrigan at the beginning of the show said right now the House and Senate seem like two different highways going off in two totally different directions.
Oh, I hope we can meet together and have a very good and productive committee of conference. We're all there for the same reason. We're all there to be sure that the state of New Hampshire has the best budget possible. And I look forward to working with the Senate, and I think we can put together a good budget for the state.
Well, Representative Wallner, we know you're busy. Thank you very much
for
being with us.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Mary Jane Wallner, Democratic State Representative from Concord, Chair of the House Finance Committee. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Charlie Arlinghouse, Kevin Landergan, Jeff McLynch, before we go to our listeners, let's talk a little bit more about the casino vote. And Kevin, you know, as Mary Jane Wallner said, and as we've said, Governor Hassan did stake a fair bit of her budget on an expected $80 million from a casino. In hindsight now, was that a risky move? Was that a mistake?
I think it was certainly a very risky move. But as Charlie pointed out earlier, one she felt she had to take. She wanted to restore a lot of the cuts from the O'Brien budget, particularly the Health and Human Services. And through the existing revenue stream, that was not possible. Now, you first go to the tried and true source, which is the cigarette tax. Former Governor John Lynch raised the cigarette tax 4 times in 4 terms. That's poll shows about 70% support for that. That got her about $40 million. She needed another $70 or $80 million to fund what she wanted to fund in this budget. And governors propose and the legislatures dispose. And so every governor not only has the first whack, but also to what Jeff was talking about earlier, gets to lay out their priorities. And at the end of the day, the governor gets to say, I put a plan together that would have accomplished all this. And the legislature is the art of compromise, and I'm not going to get everything I want. And certainly with the casino, she got flattened last week.
What do you think, Charlie?
Well, there are a bunch of different nuances here, and Kevin on Sunday sort of laid out winners and losers in this and had a good explanations of some of the machinations behind the scenes and what happened. A couple of points I want to make, though, on the state budget, and one particular winner, which is our caller, Representative Wallner, who early on took steps that made sure that this is not a problem. I think people, it's important that people understand that whatever happened or didn't happen with gambling does not affect where we are in the state budget, does not blow a hole in the state budget. Was it in the governor's budget? Yes. When the budget came over to the House, though, Representative Wallner, and I think this was actually her call, said, we're going to do a budget because we haven't voted yay or nay on this, and we won't before our time is up to pass the budget over to the Senate. We're going to craft a budget without gambling in it. If it comes in, it's extra. If it doesn't come in, it's not in the budget. So the budget that was then sent to the Senate was crafted without gambling in it. So the $80 million doesn't change anything about the House budget. There's no hole there. The Senate, similarly, has been crafting its budget the whole time without gambling as a component of it. So the rejection of gambling, and there's some supporters and some opponents who have tried to argue that this is there's a hole and there's budget chaos, and no, there's not. Nobody, since the governor gave a speech, but it was an eon ago in political terms.
February.
Yes, Valentine's Day, which is decades ago practically, was in her budget, but the situation has evolved significantly since then. And that stems largely from a decision Representative Wallner made to not budget based on that just yet.
Yeah, and probably you think, Charlie, a prudent action by both the House and Senate.
I mean, frankly, I think it was I've worried about, both institutionally and personally. We're agnostic on gambling. Gambling is not an issue for my organization, and I sort of don't care one way or the other. But if we get the money, I think the money absolutely unequivocally ought to be dedicated because it's an unreliable revenue source. It bounces up and down.
And that's what the Senate wanted to do.
Yeah.
Universities, North Country, roads. That's what they said.
I think that would have carried the day. The problem is they were going to use the licensing fees, not as dedicated money. We're going to dump that in the budget. And I was always very worried about that. So not doing it, not budgeting based on it, I think. And given at the time she made that decision, this was a very dicey proposition. We knew it was going to pass the Senate. We knew it was touch and go in the House, so I think that was smart.
You know, Jeff McLynch, again, the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute, known as more of a progressive place, supportive of government programs. How did you folks feel about the casino vote? Were you agnostic as Charlie was?
It wasn't something that we had weighed in on. I think there are strong arguments on both sides as sort of a matter of policy. I think our concern, similar to Charlie's, was the manner in which or really the timing for the realization of any sort of revenues, whether the initial license fee or for annual revenues coming from gaming income. I think to her credit, Finance Chair Wallner and also to the Senate's credit, they've constructed budgets that are separate from that question. One point I want to return to, though, is sort of differences between the House and Senate and the governor on various policy matters. I think obviously there are very key differences on some respects, but there are also some very key similarities in sort of how they put things together. I think both, the governor of the House and the Senate have all sort of identified higher education as a key priority and undoing some of the damage that was wrought during the prior legislative session. I think to some degree there are some similarities between the House and the Senate on revenues. Both have recognized that prior cuts in the Department of Revenue have hampered the state's ability to enforce current tax law, and by providing them additional resources, they'll be able to realize additional revenues. Both sides have had to resort to some degree to one-time revenue sources. The House is looking to some recent tobacco settlement money in fiscal 14 and 15. The Senate realizes that in fiscal 13, but essentially carries it forward into 14 and 15. So that there are some – while there are key differences on Medicaid expansion, for instance, on the MET or on other tax sources, there are still some similarities.
Wow. I haven't heard that word used a lot, Jeff, when people talk about the budget. Similarities.
Well, there'll be plenty to fight about, no doubt about it, but there is also plenty to agree on.
Let's hear from our listeners. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And first up is Kevin in Hillsboro. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
Good.
To have a great show, actually. But anyway, what I'd like to say is I just wonder why we never seem to have the issue of sales tax on the table. I own properties in Hillsboro, and it works out in my town to about $8,000 per house for a $180,000 house, okay, in property taxes that I pay a year. And I can't understand why that's acceptable to the property owners of the state and the voters of this state who continue to vote for people who don't put property tax on the table.
You know, Kevin, this is a great point. And maybe, Kevin Landergan, you can jump in on that one. Sales tax was not talked about this time around, but it has been talked about in prior budget debates.
Sure it has. And we had a governor, a Democratic governor, the first woman governor in the state of New Hampshire, Jean Shaheen, who proposed a sales tax before she ran and lost for a U.S. Senate seat and ultimately got it. I think that's sort of one of the lessons we have here. The broad-based tax debate remains the third rail of New Hampshire politics. People who touch it tend to die. New Hampshire is one of very few states without a sales tax. And really, when you look at how the economy has fundamentally changed over the last decade, so much of what is generated in the economy is service-related. And those services become much more attractive for small entrepreneurs looking to start up in New Hampshire if there isn't a sales tax. So Governor Maggie Hassan very much buys into this notion that it is part of the New Hampshire advantage.
Yeah, and Kevin touched on the politics of it. What about the economics of it, Charlie? Have you folks looked at, what the impact of a small sales tax would be, how high it would need to be? Has anybody really looked at that? I remember Jean Shaheen, for example, had that Blue Ribbon Commission about a decade ago.
That was the last serious substantive economic look at it. And I think a lot of that data is still, needs to be updated a little, but it's still fairly current. I think that the difficulty people have is that a couple of reasons to do taxation. One reason to have something like a sales tax would be to try to get at some sort of a consumption tax, some sort of tax on consumption, which is one of the places taxation likes to go. Arguably, our business enterprise tax is an attempt to tax consumption. If you were to institute some sort of a general sales tax, which is a less efficient method and has cross-border implications, there would probably have to be some sort of repeal or substantial rewrite of the business enterprise tax. So it's not exactly a one-for-one situation there. In addition to that, there are in all the border communities of New Hampshire, there's a sense that they benefit greatly. When Governor Shaheen at the time introduced her sales tax, for example, I think it was the head of the Brattleboro Chamber of Commerce said, "I don't care what the rate is, just as long as you have one," and just to stop people from crossing the river and coming over here. Because of that, over time, there's been this notion that people are a little bit skeptical about if instituting another big tax would lower an existing tax of theirs. So because of that, politically, this decision was made. I was on a panel once with Kathy Sullivan, the longtime Democratic chair, and she said, "I don't care about policy on anything, with one exception, and that is that I insist that anybody we nominate for governor must take the pledge against sales and income tax, and that's it. And as long as that's the ruling on the field on the side of the party that's most likely to support one, then it's just not even on the table."
Well, I appreciate you raising the question, Kevin. Thanks for calling in. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Since Kevin raised the issue of sales taxes, Kevin Lander, going to turn to you again. There were two sales taxes that did get rejected by the Senate last week, a higher tax on gasoline sales and a higher tax on cigarette sales. Now, these got rejected by the Senate pretty quickly. I'm wondering how come? Because New Hampshire hasn't raised the gas tax in 20 years. And as you said earlier, cigarette tax hikes are pretty popular.
True. And that's sort of one of the misnomers about New Hampshire's revenue base. We have a lot of sales taxes. We tax the sale of property. It's the real estate transfer tax. We tax the sale of your Big Mac. It's the room and meals tax. But the state Senate Republicans who are in charge right now, 13 of them to 11 Democrats, are really holding firm opposing any major tax and fee increases. The gasoline tax had a bit more of a sort of morality play effect to it. As we've talked about earlier in this program, the Senate leadership in both parties really supported the casino bill as the source of dedicated revenue for completing the widening of I-93 from Salem to Manchester, and also providing an ongoing revenue source for road and bridge repairs. Once that was defeated, there was kind of a retaliatory feeling in the Senate. They had staked their ground that we don't want higher taxes. We want this discretionary revenue source to be the way to pay for road and bridge work. So they were determined to kill the gas tax, and they killed it, and then they drove a stake through its heart. And that's what Mary Jane Wallner was talking about earlier today. Through a parliamentary maneuver called a move to indefinitely postpone the bill, that means the subject cannot come up in the conference committee on the budget, even though the House's budget trailer bill, that's the bill that's attached to the state budget that makes all changes in state laws needed to carry out the budget, that has a gas tax in it. But it's a topic they can't talk about now.
And those parliamentary maneuvers were important, as we learned last week, Kevin, because sometimes in that last-minute budget negotiation, someone says, wait, can we bring this idea back? And this ensures that doesn't happen.
That's right.
All right. We will take more of your calls after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. We'll also hear from a key Republican state lawmaker on the budget. So stay with us.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and People's United Bank, providing individual mortgage solutions for new and existing mortgages. People's United Bank, with know-how can do. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And from Bedford Falls Assisted Living and Memory Care Community, warm and inviting with services provided by caregivers who love what they do. To schedule tours, visit bedfordfallsassistedliving.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of mouth often finds new ideas in old stories.
It beat Benjamin Franklin at chess. It was this kind of phenomenon, and it actually turned out that there was an actual human chess expert, like, crouched inside the machine moving the pieces with a magnet, and it took years to find out.
Word of Mouth, a radio show and podcast about the other side of life, Monday through Thursday at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the news on New Hampshire newspapers. Many are struggling, some are thriving. We'll look at what it takes to make it in today's digital climate. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. Join us tomorrow morning, live at 9 for that conversation. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the state budget and where it goes from here. And let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. Joining us now on the phone is another lawmaker who has worked very closely on this, Representative Ken Wyler, Republican from Kingston, member of the Finance Committee and former chair of that committee. And Ken Wyler, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Well, after last week's big votes, budget-wise, we saw the House reject the casino. We saw the Senate reject cigarette taxes, cigarette taxes, gas taxes, and possibly Medicaid expansion. What's the way forward, in your opinion, Representative Wyler?
Well, if we move forward and the economy continues to recover, we could see a $10.7 billion budget for the biennium. Present one is $10.5, and of course, all the unions, the employee unions of the government and so on are claiming that we've destroyed government, but that hasn't been the experience. We've done all right for the last 2 years. We have delayed involving many of the information technology that has allowed efficiencies to increase in the private sector, while the public sector delays it in many departments. They don't use everything they could. By doing the cuts we did in the last budget from $11.55 billion for a biennium to $10.5, we forced some efficiencies that they were reluctant to use. And now I think there is room for more efficiencies. But if we stay at the present level plus maybe another $100 or $200 million for the biennium, then I think government will do fine. But if we try to keep growing government, it will be a negative on the economy, just as the full implementation of Obamacare would be a negative on the economy.
Where do you think you're going to find common ground during this Committee of Conference negotiations on the budget? And I'm talking, you know, Democrats and Republicans, House and Senate. We've talked about all the differences. Where do you think there might be some common ground? Mary Jane Wallner said she's hopeful.
I think that they'll have to start at where the present level of spending is and try to argue over where the extra $100-200 million could be spent. I don't think the higher education will make out as well as they think they will. Some of the areas that they felt needed to be more money to be spent were basically in health and human services. And so those are likely to be the winners in this rather than some other areas. And perhaps DOT will not get as much as I would hope they would.
How did you feel, Representative Wyler, about the House's rejection last week of the $80 million or hoped for $80 million in casino revenues?
I was very disappointed. I was a co-sponsor of the bill. I have been on many other casino bills. And I think that's obviously that the majority of the people in the state want casinos. And I don't think the vote was a reflection of people representing their constituents.
And you mentioned also Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And as you know, the House's budget included Medicaid expansion as envisioned by the Affordable Care Act. The Senate hasn't voted in full yet, but they're looking like they won't support the expansion of Medicaid. What do you say, Representative Wyler, to those who say, look, it's federal money. It'll help people who don't have insurance. It'll save the state money in the long run because you won't have people using emergency rooms and so forth. How do you feel about that critique of the view of expanding Medicaid?
What we were trying to do with managed care is a similar thing, but the hospitals were reluctant and have put roadblocks in our way. So Medicaid expansion will run into the same thing. You're going to throw more people into the health system, and we don't have the infrastructure to support it. And it will be harassment of the businesses by all these new IRS people that are going to be throwing out fines and things. So the business will their reaction will be to put more people on part-time and and productivity will go down. It will be a disaster.
Well, and I think later on this week or next week, we're going to be looking more closely at Medicaid expansion and the pros and cons. So I'll leave that alone for now. But here's a broader political question for you, Representative Wyler. We were talking about this earlier. Governor Hassan and the Democrats campaigned on a promise of what they called restoring the cuts from the previous legislature. Voters seem to respond to that since Democrats took back the House and elected Governor Hassan. How do you think voters are going to feel now if they see major cuts from you folks in the legislature?
I think the majority will be happy about it if the taxes don't increase. That was the all the rhetoric that we heard from the Democrats was from the union, and none of the, you know, they're telling the people things are a disaster, but they were not. But if people thought they were a disaster, they thought that something should happen. But it was all rhetoric.
So you're not worried that there'll be a backlash if there's major cuts?
I think if my party does a good job of explaining what happened, that we'll be all right.
One last question for Representative Wyler. And again, I know you've got a meeting coming up soon, so we really appreciate your time. What are your hopes for what happens next? I mean, everybody has to give a little as they try and take a little. What are your hopes there for this budget compromise that's coming up?
Well, obviously, they'll have to settle on a lot less spending than was planned in the Hassan budget. And that's just going to be where they're going to compromise. They'll be arguing over much smaller amounts than they had intended to. But that's the reality of it. There is a lot smaller amounts to argue about.
All right. Representative Wyler, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Ken Wyler, Republican state representative from Kingston, member of the House Finance Committee and former chair of that committee. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We want your thoughts on all that's been happening on the revenue front and looking at the budget moving forward. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. And Kevin, Jeff, Charlie, let's go right back to our listeners who've been waiting. Wayne's in Littleton. And Wayne, are you on the air? I believe we've lost Wayne. All right. Sorry about that, Wayne. 1-800-892-6477. Again, is the number for you to join us. You can email us, too, exchange@nhpr.org. Before we go back to the phones, Jeff McClinch, to you real quickly. What about Ken Wyler's comment? Look, it's not going to be a disaster. It may be a little less than the governor wanted, but it's going to be all right.
Well, I guess I'd pick up on one theme that Representative articulated, and that is the economic consequences of the state budget debate and the state's decision to accept federal funds for the Medicaid expansion. I think in both those cases, restoring some of the funding cuts that occurred in the last biennium as well as accepting those funds can help promote future economic growth. And here's what I mean. If you look at the cuts that New Hampshire enacted to its higher education system since the start of the recession, we outpaced every state in the nation except Arizona in imposing those cuts. We reduced higher ed spending at the state level by 49% on an inflation-adjusted per-pupil basis. That has had real consequences for the affordability of higher education for students in the state. We've seen tuition increases rise by about 36% over the same period. The long-term consequences of that are pretty clear. Most people agree that with a degree in hand, you see a higher income in the very short term, but also there are benefits to the community. Most research suggests that if you look at areas with higher concentrations of college-educated people, wages are higher overall, not just for people with degrees, but people in general who work in that area.
So disagreeing with his assessment that this wasn't such a disaster, you're saying yes,
real,
it was?
There are very real consequences to what the state did. Secondly, on the opportunity to expand the state's Medicaid program, the Lewin Group over the past 6 months has conducted two very detailed studies of this opportunity. And what they found is that should the state elect to do this, it'll bring in upwards of $2.5 billion in federal funds over the next seven years. That means additional jobs for the state. It means growth in gross state product. It means growth in personal income. And it means lower out-of-pocket health costs. Therefore, you're able to spend more on other services.
Yeah. And as I said, Charlie, we're going to be talking about this later this week or next week. But your take also on the Senate's rejection of Medicaid expansion. I know it gets a little technical. It's easier to understand cigarette taxes and gas taxes. But this is really important when it comes to the budget.
Right. Well, like with anything, there's always two sides to every story and a couple of different ways of looking at it. For example, when Jeff talks about a 50% cut to the states, aid to the university system, the lawmakers at the time realized that the state is a very small player in the university system's total budget. And so that cut in the state subsidy to the university's operations isn't actually a 50% cut to their operating budget. It's more like a 4 or 5% cut to their operating budget at a time when the state was making a 10% cut to its own operating budget. And they looked at that and said, we're not even asking them to cut as much as we are. So they look at it. That's one way to look at it. On the Medicaid expansion thing, there's another question about that. And there are a lot of questions in every state about Medicaid expansion. And are you going to achieve what you want to achieve? The claim is that we will reduce the amount of uninsured. The two states that have expanded Medicaid the most in the last 10 years both saw, in fact, the percentage of uninsured in those states stay exactly the same, and the number of privately insured people go up. So there's a notion that there's a significant crowd out. And if that's the case, do we want to sign up for a program that's going to be very difficult to opt out of once we opt in, that we're not convinced necessarily that the federal government is going to keep its promise on?
Crowd out meaning people who had private said, oh, I can go on Medicaid instead.
Rather than the number of uninsured going down, the number of there are private insurance switching to Medicaid. And that's, by the way, consistent with academic research from Harvard and Boston U on the subject.
Okay, and Jeff, I can see you want to jump in. I don't want to spend the whole rest of the hour talking about this because we've got some more listeners, but go ahead.
Just make one point in sort of considering past states' efforts to expand their Medicaid programs. The state closest to us, Maine, who went down this road, as Charlie pointed out, we saw some relatively stable levels in the rate of uninsurance. I think it's important to consider what else was happening in addition to Medicaid. At the period that we're looking at here, nationwide uninsurance rose by about 5 percentage points. It stayed stable in Maine. Secondly, there were changes within the program over the course of the period that put caps on people. I think also some of the claims about uncompensated care or charity care, when you look at a little more detail, you see that what Maine did was to actually expand people's abilities to access that care. So there are good reasons why it may not look quite the way it does.
All right, a preview of an upcoming show there on Medicaid expansion. Let's go back to our callers. And Marcia's waiting in Bradford. Hi, Marcia, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
You've talked about the existing taxes in New Hampshire, the sales taxes, which are not called sales taxes. There's also an income tax, which is not called an income tax. And the thought is that a modest increase in the interest and dividends tax, which is our income, could go a long way towards helping the state get out of this dilemma. I know it's not going to be discussed at this session, but it still is something to have out there on the table.
And primarily paid by retirees, right, Marcia, who are relying on... No?
Not necessarily retirees, anyone with income.
Yeah, okay. And something that you would support. Thanks for calling in. And Kevin, can you enlighten us a little bit just on this other income tax that Marcia talks about?
Yeah, it's a tax on unearned income. I had we had a cookout over the weekend, and as Marcia
in the rain,
as Marcia pointed out, this falls pretty heavily on people who depend on their investments for retirement income. But as I was saying during the cookout, this couple told us, you know. Every year, we usually get at least a $3,000 refund from the government. And because through the recession, the stock market did not do well. Your 401k did not do well. We've certainly seen in the last 15 to 18 months a pretty robust recovery on Wall Street, particularly of index funds. Anyway, this particular couple only got a $50 refund instead of $3,000 and paid more than 500 of it to the state of New Hampshire in its interest and dividends tax.
So, but as she says, rightly, I think, nobody's talking about that this year.
Nobody is talking about that. That's at 5%, it's considered a pretty aggressive tax on unearned income, and there's been no serious attempt to raise it in 20 years.
Okay, Marcia, thanks a lot for the call. And so, Charlie, we've talked a lot about revenue. We've had listeners call in about sales taxes. We've got Marcia talking about interest and unearned income tax. We've talked about sales taxes, cigarette taxes, gas taxes. What about cuts, Charlie? Are we starting to have to talk about cuts, given that all these revenue options have been shut off?
No. In fact, the budget will not be cut. The budget will increase. The question is, will the budget... I mean, the problem is, in budget debate, what's a cut mean? mean, to me, a cut means you spent less this year than you spent last year. And in a lot of the budget debate, and people need to read things and listen to things and watch things with some degree of caution, because if I want a program, then it's a cut. If somebody proposed raising it by $10 million and instead we're going to raise it by $5 million. As an example of this, even in the sort of the so-called catastrophic cuts of last year, the cuts fell very heavily on non-HHS programs, and HHS as a whole was up a bit.
Health and Human Services,
and some of the more important subcategories of HHS were up a great deal. Now, the governor would like to increase those spending categories a great deal, and in likelihood, they're going to be increased a little bit. And so the question is, do you think of that as a cut or not?
Well, and the reason I asked, Charlie, is after the Senate rejected a number of House-supported revenue options, the Democratic Party said, hey, Republicans, show us the cuts. You know, you're going to have to make big cuts. So you're saying, Charlie, it's not so much that there will be cuts, but more if Agency A wanted $10 million and it only gets $2 million, some will call that a cut.
The budget that comes out of the Senate Finance Committee today will have increased spending over the levels of last year. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Due to inflation, due to increased population.
Due to inflation, and frankly, our taxes are all going up a bit. Each year, the business profits tax, we've passed the worst of the recessionary numbers from a tax standpoint, and each year those come back a little bit.
Fair to call it cuts, Kevin?
Yeah, it's one of these wordsmithings that we have to do in our business as well, because... And it's all about politics. I mean, the party in power, once the governor puts a budget together, and once the House, Mary Jane Wallner, executed a budget, I think did an excellent job executing a budget that was close to the governor, not quite there, approved an $11 billion budget. That becomes a line in the sand now. Anything retreating from $11 billion by the Democrats' definition is a cut. The Senate... right now is talking about a $10.7 billion cut, which is more than $200 billion more than we spend right now.
So they've got their own definition of what's a cut.
Right.
All right. Well, real interesting leading into the budget negotiations. And as we all said, the Senate's meeting today on this. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to come in. Jeff McLynch, good to see you. Thank you for being here. Jeff McLynch, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute. Charlie, thank you also for your time.
Always a pleasure.
Charlie Arlinghouse, President of the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy. And Kevin Landrigan, thank you as well.
This was fun.
Kevin Landrigan, longtime political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Faith Meixel and Catherine Muzzy. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.